I'm Jackie Vetrano from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
And I'm Logan Bishop from Belmont University. You're listening to Higher Ed Social, part of the Connect EDU network. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Thank you, guys. I'm really thrilled to be here.
Yeah. We'll start with having you. We've been doing a really good job, Logan, of just getting right into introductions, so I'm really happy about that. Yes. So we'll have you introduce yourself however you feel fit.
Sure. I am Jason Olica. I'm a professorial lecturer, as they say, at American University in the School of Communication. I've been teaching now since 2015, though I've done the PRSA and PRSSA conferences. Been always passionate about helping students and helping to shape the next generation of pros that are out there. I can honestly say that I love what I do and love going to work each day and being able to, you know, work with students and help them become the best pros they can be. I've been in television and radio before public relations. I've worked in Philadelphia and New York City and helped to launch Fox News Radio back in 2003. And I can pretty much say that I've enjoyed every facet of my career. Even if something went badly, it was something that helped shape me to who I am today. So I'm really happy to be here, and I really thank you for asking me to be on the show.
Yeah, we're so excited. And Logan and I, well, we were just saying this earlier, is like, this is, it's always fun to have folks that are in the marketing communications wheelhouse, because I feel like we have some pretty fun discussion. Not that I don't love the rest of our guests, obviously, equally. But it's really nice that we have someone, I don't think we've had a faculty in communications yet, Logan, have we?
We have not. And we've never had anyone that has quite the background that you do. Which I actually find quite fascinating. I mean, you've been a television producer. You've helped launch Fox News Radio, as you mentioned. You've worked for NBC, Comcast, Sportsnet, Fox News Channel. I mean, you've been all over the place.
Yeah, you know, it's I have the stickers and suitcases to prove it. You know, it's been you know, honestly, my first love was television and radio. And that's what, when I was in high school, I knew I'm either going to be the public address announcer for the Yankees or I'm going to do play-by-play for the Mets. And that was my dream. But because I knew I wasn't going to be on the field unless I was there with a microphone. But, you know, after a while, it just, you know, it kind of evolved into, you know, doing radio updates in Philadelphia. And then, you know, I worked for the Phillies for a time in college, and that was a blast. And so every step along the way was just, I mean, really looking back at it, it was a lot of fun. I'm glad that I grew up in the time that I did, and not that the times that we're in now aren't great, regardless of where you stand. I know this is a word used a lot, but I feel really blessed. It's been a great ride. I have a supportive family and you know, now working in public relations and communications and working at American University in their faculty, I'm just really pleased, and it's nice to see the direction the industry of public relations and communications is going right now. It's fluid, but I think the good is there, even though we do see some of the, you know, the warts, as they say, with Twitter sometimes and with Facebook. But I think overall, we're in a time that really is helping to shape the world, and you guys are involved in it. You know, I'm working with students, but also doing work behind the scenes at American and our digital analytics center to sort of look at what's going on with data and on social. So it's a great time. But I've loved every part of my career, and it's just helped to get me to where I am today.
So fun. So you said you were at American since 2015.
Yep. I started as an adjunct professor at a connection when we first moved to the Maryland area in 2015. And they asked if I would be possibly interested in teaching at American. I jumped at it because I was actually going in that direction. I was consulting at the time. I had run my own consultancy for a while, and I wanted to get kind of back into a little more stability. Not that consulting isn't great, but I wanted to, you know, kind of get back in that teamwork type of setting. So this was a perfect opportunity. And I started adjuncting there, and then I also was an adjunct at the University of Maryland and helped create their social media course and a social media analytics course there. But then I was still an adjunct at American and taught two more classes. And then they asked if I would like to apply for a position. I did. And this past summer, I got the acceptance and started as a professor, as they say, professorial lecturer at American this past September. So it's been great.
So, yeah, have you created your syllabuses, plural of syllabus, from scratch?
You know, the great thing I will say, yeah, there are courses that I've developed. The digital, as we call it at American, it's digital analytics certification. We call it digital analytics certification. And we look at the data, but also teach the students. We've actually partnered with Meltwater. And they get certified. The students get certified while they're in the class. So they walk into an internship or they walk into a job not having to be taught that. We help them through it and they do projects. So that course I actually created based on what I had done at Maryland. And one of the things that I will say is that because things have changed so much, it allows us to be adaptable. So having Meltwater be there, which has been great, and allowing us to use their platform and teaching the students how they can get certified and showing them how they can use not just looking at likes and shares and comments, but actually looking what the underbelly is and see how what comes from these posts and how we need to really look at them. So, yeah, I have syllabuses, that's probably doesn't sound very educated, but, the great thing about our school and our division is that we do a lot of sharing with, if you haven't taught a class, one of the professors that has taught it, they'll say, hey, take a look at the syllabus and see if there's something that you can either take that and use it and adapt it for yourself. Or, if you're teaching it for the first time and want to get your feet wet, take that. And yeah. I've been lucky. We have a very collaborative school and our division it's called Public Communication Division. We're in the School of Communication, but we do public relations, we do public communication research, things like that. So, but the professors and my colleagues, they're very helpful, but there are also times that I'll take a class and look at the syllabi from past semesters and say, all right, you know what, this looks good for this week, but I think I want to add a little more. And honestly, as you guys have probably heard over the years, it's your contacts too. The people right. that will speak to your classes or offer you a chance for your students to talk to your students or offer them advice that, they may get sick of hearing me in class. Believe me, when you're yapping for almost an hour or a little over an hour, it gets a little monotonous. And even my wife says that too. So
those Tuesday, Thursday classes are killer.
Yeah. And when you're teaching a block class, which I just finished up a little while ago, I teach on Wednesday nights, well, at least for the next 2 weeks, from 5:30 until 8, and we break. But it's a long time, and, it's a long time for the students. So we got to keep them engaged. And so we have to make sure we're adjusting to see what they need to know and so we keep them, positive. But, I will say is that having colleagues that I'm friendly with and can trust, I name her all the time, but I have no problem doing it. It's Deirdre Breckenridge. She's one of our industry's finest. We have been friends. We actually met over Twitter. Mm-hmm. She's an author. She's an educator. But our relationship started via Twitter through PR Stud Chat. And we've collaborated. But over the years, as a matter of fact, in my class for public relations at American, my students submitted blogs to her. And she picked the top five that will run on her blog, which gets, tons of views. So the students get recognition. They get the experience of networking, but they also get the experience of what it's like to publish your work in a place that people will see it. And I, I couldn't do this without my colleagues, but also my friends that were at first colleagues, but now I can trust them to come in and really help even push that education that much further.
That's one of the amazing things just in higher ed in general, even between institutions, I found that everyone is generally pretty willing to give a suggestion or, talk about things from their experiences, all these kinds of things. And hey, that's how I met Jackie. I met mm-hmm. Jackie on Twitter. And you know, look, we made a podcast.
Right.
And it's really great because there are so many communities within higher education where people work together. And that's something we've learned through the show. I mean, there's a whole support group for runners in higher ed. There's a WWE wrestling clique of higher ed professionals where they talk about issues that they deal with in student affairs, but also share their love of fake wrestling. It's quite interesting.
They're laying the smackdown. If they're going to lay the smackdown, they might as well do it, you know, in a forum and then share the knowledge and, you know, let Hulkamania run wild if they want. That's great.
But it's really amazing. That's one of the things that I've loved about working in higher ed versus working in the corporate sector, which I've never really done, but you know, I see my colleagues that work in that sector and it's very cutthroat. No one kind of works together. Not like they do here. I mean, we are competing with each other, but it doesn't feel like we are. So, they're definitely communities and it's nice.
It is. It is really nice. And I think that that's what makes our jobs, I think, that much more appealing. And frankly, it makes us more passionate to help our students. If you work at a place, even if you're not in higher ed, you see it on social media. If someone's not happy with where they are, it shows. You can see it in their posts. You can see it. We've all talked. I mean, I worked for a small agency in Buffalo for a little while, and you know, I won't name what it was, but I mean, I have no problem saying it, got let go, and I wasn't happy anyway. So it was they were actually doing me a favor, but it can be agency life can be, and I have many friends that are in the agency world and they love it. But it also can be very cutthroat. And the same thing goes for education too. There are places and, you know, colleges and universities around the country where, you know, you hear the horror stories sometimes, but then, when you've dealt with the bad times, it makes you appreciate times when you love what you do that much more. Whether you're a consultant, whether you're running your own business, or whether you're working in like you are, Logan, working at Belmont and being part of a great team, that goes a long way to helping us appreciate what we do that much more. And I really feel, and as I said at the top, you know, I'm not saying that I love American just because I'm talking to you guys. I truly and honestly do love it there because we have great people. We have people that are truly and honestly wanting to go out each day and help each other. And that goes a long way to not just our happiness, but the students and the university. And it's cyclical. And I like that. I wish there were more times we could see that in higher ed. But, you know, we all can't work at Belmont. We all can't work at American. And, you know, sorry for everybody else, I guess.
The end. No, it is true though. I mean, I think everyone, as you were talking, is probably thinking about that place that they weren't happy and the place that they are happy. Like it really does make a difference in the quality of your work, and it also like radiates out. I've learned very quickly, it radiates out into other like corners of your life that aren't in the office. Like if you're not happy in your job, like we spend so much time at work, like period, even if you only work your 40 hours a week that you are supposed to be working. You know, I joke all the time that I decorate my office because it's the one place that I spend pretty much the most amount of time per week, aside from my apartment, that most of the time I'm sleeping in and not really even like living in. And yeah, it's incredibly important.
And that's the thing too. And it comes off into, honestly, it for me at least, when I first got really, you know, now faculty at AU, you know, the first thing I thought about is where am I going to, this sounds, may sound a little odd, but where am I going to put my Captain America shield? I have a replica of the shield. And I was like, I need to put it in my office because it's as odd as this may sound, it reminds me of something that says, you know what, I look at that and I think there is nothing I can't do with that, you know, that I can't do now. And I really believe that the environment you put around yourself, Jackie, like you said, I mean, you spend time in the office, you're going to decorate. You know, Logan, I'm sure in your office you put things around that, you know, make you feel positive about being there. That way, if something does go wrong or haywire, you can always come back to the point of like, all right, it's a day, we'll let it go, come back, and hey, I like being here. And that's the way I look at it. I'll, you know.
You have your Captain America shield. I have my lightsaber. Lightsabers are very hard to find a place for. I mean, there is not a shelf that fits them.
No, it's not like you can leave it. You can't just leave it without it being, you know, extended in a way. It's like,
it is extended.
It's a lightsaber, you know?
It's a Force Effects lightsaber. The blade is there. It doesn't come off.
If I had that, I wouldn't get any work done, believe me. I'd be sitting there waving it. My office mate would be annoyed as anything at me. She'd probably want to take it and you know, zap me with it or put it through me. So, you know, I wouldn't blame her, but I wouldn't get any work done if I had that.
Hey, my best story with the lightsaber. So we have storms here in Nashville because, you know, we're in the middle of the country. There's always thunderstorms. So we lose power from time to time. The first time we lost power with me having the lightsaber, my office is adjacent to the student recording studios. So the lights go out. There's no windows, so there's no light. I can't see anything. The only thing that's within reach is my lightsaber. So I grab my lightsaber. I turn it on. You know, it makes the sound. The blade goes up. It lights up the room. And then the kids, like, come from the recording studio and look in my office, and they're like, do you have a lightsaber?
Oh, that's like, great.
So anyway, it was hilarious.
No, I mean, now it's not the Kylo Ren lightsaber, right?
It's Luke Skywalker. Like, actually, it's an Anakin Skywalker blue lightsaber. Hey, vibranium's cool too.
You know, vibranium is the strongest metal around. I mean, that's if you had to get it out of Wakanda and put it into a shield. I mean, I want it in my office. That's the way I look at it. So. But if I were to add Thor's hammer and an Iron Man helmet, I think some of my colleagues would probably think, something. We're either not giving him enough work, or we need to check him and make sure that he's not left us mentally.
I guess my question is, what is stronger, adamantium or vibranium?
See, you know, that's a good question. One of my friends said, you know, you have this shield, and they always say it's the strongest metal. And they said, what about, you know, Wolverine's claws? And I said, you know, that's the thing. The great thing about Marvel, in some ways, they claim to have two of the strongest metals, yet, you know, Wolverine's got the claws, Cap has the shield. So what is it? I would say, because of how strong Wolverine is and he's got the healing effect, I'm going to go with adamantium, even though with my shield, and it, you know, obviously given to me by Captain America himself. I would say that runs a close second to adamantium, and I wouldn't mess with Wolverine. So,
yeah, it seems a little more dangerous.
Yeah,
yay, fictional metals.
I'm just
anyway.
I agree with all of that.
Hey, it's Jackie. Thanks so much for listening to Higher Ed Social. We really appreciate it. I just wanted to take a minute to tell you about this really cool podcast player called Radio Public. And I know you probably already have your podcast player that you go to all the time, but take a listen to Radio Public because it's way different than any other podcast player out there. You can find it both in the Apple App Store as well as Google Play Store. And the thing that's so cool about Radio Public is that it actually starts to learn a little bit about you. You can organize your podcasts into playlists, or if you just want something new, you can head over to the app and pick up a different playlist. They have one called Lazy Sunday or Podcast Club. So whatever you're feeling, you're going to be able to find something. What I think is the best part about using the Radio Public app, though, is when you're looking for something new and you just want to ask your friends, what new podcast should I listen to? Radio Public's got your back. So you can ask the podcast librarians, yes, actual people, what new podcast should I listen to? And because they have done extensive research and listened to tons of podcasts, they're going to give you a great suggestion. So you can head over to radiopublic.com or download the app in both the Apple App Store and Google Play Store and just give it a shot. You know, you'll never know what you're going to find. All right, let's get back to the show.
But Jackie, here, let me bring this up though, and I will tell you, as someone that we talked before we went on, that I lived in Buffalo for 10 years. My children were born there, and I've been to many a Bills game to see them play, and I can tell you that one of my favorite social media accounts to follow is the Bills.
Yes.
Because I'm always looking to see what teams are doing it well and what ones are not. And I'll tell you, whenever Chris Berman always says that, you know, there's no team like the Bills that circles the wagons. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, on social, they circle the wagons just as well as they do back in the day. And it's nice to see, because I'm sure you've shared with Logan the plight of the Buffalo Bills over the years, but to see the reaction this past fall, winter, and mm-hmm. when they made the playoffs, mm-hmm. I'm a diehard Giants fan. I will never not support Buffalo. And to see the reaction and to see everybody celebrate and to see them giving money to the Bengals quarterback, and I'm drawing a blank and I'll remember in a second, but to see what they did, that to me shows the power of not only social, but the mm-hmm. transitional effect it has on the public that's not on social. And it's mm-hmm. and it's really, there's, I'll be honest with you, there's, Nashville's passionate, don't get me wrong, I love the Preds, but and the Titans, obviously, that, you know, the Titans are good too, but
The Preds are better.
Yeah, I'll go with the Preds. I'm a big hockey fan. So, but you see what happens when people believe in something. That's the great thing about social, and it brings people together. And that's a great case study in what can happen if you believe in an idea, and you believe in a team like the Bills that hasn't, unfortunately, has struggled. But to see what happened, and even though they lost in the playoffs, I said to my wife, I said, you know, for all of the pain that the city has gone through with this, to see the reaction on social and see how proud people were, you got to bottle that up and try to find a way to make it work for another business, because it was awesome. I would love to do a case study on that one of these days, and just to see, it's great.
That's so funny you say that, because I, at the beginning of this semester for one of my classes, was tasked with, describing my favorite brand and why. Mm-hmm. And I said mine was the Bills because of a lot of things that you said, but kind of also more generally, like the fact that being part of the community feels so much different than being a fan of any other sports team that I'm a fan of.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's just a different vibe. And one of my classmates kind of responded and said, like, well, why didn't you pick the NFL? And I was mm-hmm. like, no, it's totally different. Like, the Bills have really, I think, done a good job at leveraging, like, their community and, like, the Bill, you know, the Bills Mafia circling the wagons, like, just throwing people into tables, but we won't talk about it. You know, like, all of that type of stuff have really leveraged it across, like, not only, like, their social channels, but, like, their merch that they sell, like, really is saying, like, hey guys, we hear you and we see you and, like, we're here for you. So yes, any listeners who are like, I'm not really a football fan, just be a Bills fan, because the community is amazing.
Oh, it's great. And they really do a nice job up there, as far as, and it helps when you win, believe me, but even when they're losing, that you can see,
right,
you know, you see just how passionate the fans come across on social. And And you're right. It's a great case study. But I'm glad you picked the Bills as a brand, because you just see, look, the Sabres are wonderful, and I know they've struggled a lot. But the thing about it is, as good as the Sabres could be, and they would capture the hearts of the city when they were really winning, there's nothing like Bills football in Buffalo. It brings. I mean, people stop on Sunday and they order Duff's, or they'll go to a local wing place. It's, you know, you get Salins, or you go to Wegmans, get a sub or whatever, and it's an event. And I think what's made it even more special about that is that with their brand is that it's because of where the stadium is. Ralph, you know, now New Era Field, or whatever, I still call
it the Ralph. I have a shirt that says I still call it the Ralph.
Yeah, and I like New Era, don't get me wrong. I wear all their hats, but I still call it, you know, the Ralph. But that's the thing. You know, you have that in certain areas, where maybe in Green Bay the Packers have it, or you know, maybe in other, you know, I'm a big Giants fan, but I, you know, as big as a Giants fan I am, I would never, you know, say that they have fans like the Bills. The Bills fans are just, they're tried and true, they're hardened, they're, you know, they've lost Super Bowls, but they have legends, and I think their brand is, believe me, if they end up walking out of the draft with something good, that their brand is going to be that much more special on social. And I could go on for hours talking about the Bills. I'm sure talk about someone else, though.
That will be our separate podcast. Yes. We'll talk about the Bills as a brand.
Sure.
Well, you guys, well, you're talking about the Bills, but see, this is one of the things that I found incredibly interesting about the Predators. Just to bring it back to that here in Nashville, because we're in Tennessee and hockey is as big, if not bigger, than football in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, we're in the South. I mean, this city just is in love with this hockey team. I mean, especially right now, cause you know, we're in the Stanley Cup playoffs, but
right.
I mean, there are Catfish shirts all over the place. And if those of you who kind of wonder what the Catfish thing is, we kind of throw Catfish out on the ice. Mm-hmm. To intimidate the other team, I guess. I don't know. But we sneak, like, last year when we were playing the Penguins in the Stanley Cup Finals, like, someone literally took a catfish, ran over it with his truck 3 times so that it would fit in his pants. Snuck it into the stadium at the Penguins, like, you know, whatever, and threw it out on the ice, and he was arrested. And I believe the charge was having an instrument of crime.
Yeah.
Which now there are so many catfish shirts here in Nashville that just say instrument of crime. It's not even funny.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
But you brought up a good point about the brand in Nashville.
Yeah. 10 years ago, the Preds were leaving. They were leaving Nashville to go to Canada. And now they are the number one sport in this city, which is just crazy.
Yeah, and it's, but it also shows too. And I was looking at a little bit of analysis during the playoffs. I'll dive into my Meltwater profile to kind of look and see what people are talking about. So obviously, I'm taking a look from a brand perspective and from a measurement perspective to see how the NHL is doing with social. And when I look at to see what the Preds are doing, you know, let's be honest. I mean, when they made the finals last year, I don't think many expected it, but that's not a knock on the Preds. What it does show you is this, just how far they've come. The great thing about them from the start, though, is they had all the country artists that bought into that team. They got tickets. You know, it was the Garth Brookses of the world. Carrie Underwood, when she started to get established, and obviously being married to Mike Fisher, and now he's in Nashville, and he came out of retirement and played now. But what they've done a really nice job of building their brand. And you see the thing about the catfish, that's something that you wouldn't even think 5-6 years ago that it would fly, and it does now, because the fans believe in the team and they know the brand is strong. They could struggle out of the gate, but they made smart trades. Having PK Subban on that team, even though Shea Weber is a terrific player, it just brings their visibility as a brand that much higher. And looking at them on social, NHL teams, as much as I love the Bills and NFL things on social, the NHL teams on social media are absolutely, they're savage, but it's hilarious.
That's how
they end up building their fan base up. The Las Vegas Golden Knights have done it very, very well. They played off of things. They teased the Kings. They teased the Sharks. But then Nashville can play it because they've been there, and now they want to go back. But you see how the NHL has built up this brand now, and they're a social media brand. People are able to really buy in. And in Nashville, obviously, and, you know, Logan, you know better than I do, but being a fan from afar, you can see just how well Nashville has embraced this team, and it goes, you're right. I mean, they were going to leave, and because of how they've now gone about doing things, they're the toast of the town, but they're also one of the toasts of the NHL too.
Well, it's one of the things that blow my mind is that I'm making social media in cahoots with the Preds to celebrate their victories and things like that. So I've asked and gotten access to Bridgestone Arena to make animated GIFs with our mascot wearing a Preds jersey. And, you know, that's one of the cool and amazing things that we've done in, like, you know, together with them is, you know, we cheer their victories and they cheer us back. And we're just one big happy city, and it's awesome.
You know, it also comes back to what I tell my students about building relationships. And you can build relationships on social. It doesn't happen overnight. But if you're a brand that shows to be, you know, transparent and ethical and honest, and I'm not trying to, you know, throw out the, you know, 10 commandments of public relations and social media here, but look at what you've done with Belmont and look at what you both have done with the podcast. You've had to make sure you've built the brand up, but also showed that you are a legitimate and also trustworthy brand. By being able to get access to the Bridgestone Arena and, you know, showing Belmont's mascot with, you know, at the Predators Arena, hey, you couldn't just call them up and do that. You had to have some sort of, you know, relationship or build a relationship in many ways. So I think that's the one thing that I always try to stress is as much as when I was growing up, it was about your resume and cover letter and, oh, you pick up the phone and make a call and try to build a relationship. Now it's totally, you can reach out on email, you try to make a phone call, but if you can establish a relationship on social and people can trust you, it goes a long way to helping you speed up that relationship that much more.
So to kind of like bring it back to higher ed, not that I don't love
yes.
this conversation.
No, no, it's fine.
But I'm thinking about kind of moving backwards. You were talking a lot about like how the brands are really using, like leveraging social and developing like a pretty much a voice. And I find that not a lot of higher education institutions are doing the same thing. Like they're very academic and monotone and just like, you know, here's a link to one of our press releases on our website. Like, why do you, or do you disagree? Like, why do you think that's the case?
The reason why universities or higher ed institutions draw more of like push people to the web, or I want to make sure that
I feel that less higher ed institutions are finding their voice on social media and becoming a true brand. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, like the Predators are, you know, like we can personify the Predators because of their like lighthearted nature. And like we talked about the Bills and their community. But yet, like when I think about some higher ed institutions, it to me, like their social media presence just feels like brick and mortar. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think that's one of the things. And one of the things I had seen in the beginning of when social was really starting to evolve, where universities were slow to the jump to get on social because they didn't, you know, a lot of the, I don't want to say ivory tower, but a lot of the universities were not keen on buying into social. Now they realize that to get more people interested in their brand, like you said, they need to be on Twitter. They need to be on Facebook. Look, I can tell you, you know, I can be perfectly honest with you that universities look at that social data. They need to make sure that they're posting on or doing ads on Facebook, or they need to be making sure their students and ambassadors are on social, and the university has to have a strong voice. If not, that's enrollment right there. Those are numbers that they can't get back. If they, you know, think about it, and where we are in Washington, D.C., we have Georgetown, we have GW, we have AU, but then we look at, we have University of Maryland, we have George Mason. There are a lot of universities in the area. We may have different programs, but there may be some similarities. And the difference between a student coming to, say, you know, George Washington as opposed to AU may, you know, bank on what they see on a social channel and whether they click to the website. So I agree with the brand. And I will say a little bit of story, even though I don't get a chance to chat too much with our university social folks, I do talk with our School of Communication social folks. And I can tell you that I do know, and watching our new president, Sylvia Burwell, talk, she gets on social media a lot. And one of the things that the university did when she was named the new president, she was on social, she was doing live streaming, she was doing videos, and she was showing how she could be, in some ways, a brand. But then also she was the face of the university, even though all of our students are the face in some way, and the faculty and staff, she's the one that's the president. So having her out there being conversing and sharing and being open and transparent, it's gone a long way to help our brand, but it's also gone a long way to help, I think, other universities see that, look, if you put your name out there, you need to make sure you have a consistent voice. And I'm sure, you know, Logan, I'm sure you can speak on that. You know, Jackie, I know you can as well. I think it's, we're definitely brands now more than ever.
For sure. Yeah, it's interesting to watch other brands. I mean, like, Wendy's always gets, you know, becomes the example of like, oh my gosh, look at what you can do with social. And right. I think a lot of, you know, institutions are on the opposite side of that sometimes. And it's, I don't know. I'm all for having a voice on, you can have a voice on social and still get your point across.
Absolutely. And I think that's the one thing that some universities miss out on. They don't understand that it's a bonus to be able to spread your message, whether it's about something good the university is doing. Look at UMBC when they were in the NCAA tournament. I mean, their social media channels were blowing up over athletics. But while at least a number of years ago, studies showed that, you know, when teams made the tournament, it didn't actually, you know, cause a bump in enrollment. But when you have something like that, it does keep people with an ear. So when they say UMBC, they think, oh, that was the team. Oh, they had a great Twitter account. And that's the way we looked at it, too. I mean, our president, President Burwell, is very active on social. And it's not just to talk about what's going, you know, she doesn't just, it's not canned messages. It's things that we know that she would say. And you're right. I mean, it, in many ways, we think of Wendy's, but then you think of other brands out there that do a good job on social. And we say, oh, wow, well, they're supposed to do that. Well, right. Universities have to think like that as well now, too, because we see the numbers. You know, enrollments are down in places. And although, you know, it's going up in other areas, that's why universities are looking online. That's why they're trying to find different programs. That it's because they need to get the word out more, and social media is helping with that. But it comes back to, again, is there a good strategy behind it? Because if you don't have a good strategy behind it, then it's just noise, like we see with some of the accounts nowadays.
Well, wow, that's I think that's a really great place to end the show on, because that is great advice.
Too.
So thanks, Jason, for joining us.
This has been outstanding. I really, you know, thank you so much for having me. You guys are outstanding. I love the conversation. I hope my Italian yapping didn't go making people annoyed.
No, we have people on the show just to talk, so you did great.
Oh, yes. Thank you, and you guys do a great job, and I can't wait to, you've got a listener for life now, or as long as you keep the podcast going, I'll be listening.
Cool. For it.
Well, speaking of listeners, listeners, head down to highered.social and get links to the stuff we talked about today, and subscribe to the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you like the show, please consider giving us a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at HES Podcast. Send us a tweet. We love hearing from you. And don't forget to let us know if you want to be on the show. Higher Ed Social is produced by the amazing Emma Hawes and is part of the Connect EDU Network, the first podcast network for higher education. Visit our website, connectedu.network, and subscribe to some awesome shows no matter where you work on campus. Thanks, and see you next week.